Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You. Today I have a person I have a lot of respect for, Mr. Akshay Bector. He's built an absolutely amazing food company. And more importantly, I'm now buying his products, which I don't have to bring them back from overseas, from a mayonnaise to salsa to different kinds of sauces. So, Akshay, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
It's great to have you with us. Akshay is an engineer with a degree in industries and industrial production. And soon after graduating, you set up a bread plant.
Yes, I did.
And then you moved on to becoming a vendor for McDonald's.
Yes, I did.
So, Akshay, talk to us a little bit about your early days as an entrepreneur.
So, I think entrepreneurship was kind of the only thing that I was thinking of, even while doing engineering. Unlike most of my other friends from college, who ended up
working professionally
and, of course, going and leading quite a few corporates around the world. But I think for me, it was always business and nothing else. I think it was more to do with the background and the family has been in business for over 100 years. So to think of working professionally was just never did occur. Mm. And of course, getting into food is part and parcel of maybe your background, that there is a certain degree of knowledge and familiarity that helps you with it. But it was a difficult time. And even though I wanted to be an entrepreneur, what I can say is that I had to really start from scratch, even though it was a business family, because terrorism was at its peak in Punjab. Mm-hmm. And the family business had come to a standstill for more than a decade.
Wow.
So there was very little capital that was available that the family would spare for my new ideas. And I really started with just 100,000 rupees in 89.
Amazing.
To start a bread plant. Mm-hmm. And we somehow managed to put it up. And of course, the rest is history, and one thing led to another. Mm. So including the tie-ups with the McDonald's. I think it was just a graduation of doing a good job and then somebody recognizing it.
Right. Because McDonald's is an organization which is, I think a lot of people must have vied to get approved by them.
So McDonald's is, I would say, a very, very thorough company when it comes to their supply chain. Mm. And it's a company that is extremely fastidious and knows that it's going to choose the appropriate partners. Mm. In its journey. And, there was a fair degree of audit that they did. And of course, I was a young entrepreneur without much capital, and I made no bones about it. Mm. I think that was a time when perhaps we were doing things in a way that was more aligned to their thought process. Mm. So, and I think that that is perhaps the reason why a whole lot of work was entrusted to me. Mm. So it was almost unheard of in the system that a single person without any capital could end up doing buns, batter and breading premixes, and liquid condiments, all of them, for McDonald's. Normally, this would be more than three vendors, mm. three different companies. And that's pretty amazing experience.
Very amazing.
And of course, it pulled me to the, stretched us to the bits, mm-hmm. to try and get all these things going, but it happened.
So what were your big challenges? You know, big American companies have very, very stringent systems and procedures. And you must have had to retrain a lot of your management teams to move away from what we have in India, which is Jugaad, to something which is so American and very, very structured.
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's a happy mixture of both approaches. And largely we were aligned because we were already working quite professionally, and the engineering background, and particularly the industrial engineering background, had already aligned my thought processes and working to be more methodical. And working with McDonald's led to further improvement in the way we were working. And of course, there are more learnings, and I think some of the values got imbibed, and even the values were quite aligned, and they are all old world values of doing things right and, you know, keeping partnerships, dealing with the quality, I mean, do a quality job, and I would say that be what you are, so that if you're talking about quality, then you're a quality organization, not just in your factory, but in your thoughts, processes, relationships. So you take it across the board. And those were some of the big learnings that, you know, I think I was deeply influenced by the working of that company and its philosophy.
Correct. In fact, what you're saying is so right, because when I brought GNC, which is the world's largest nutrition company, to India, I think they brought in a lot of discipline into Guardian, you know, about how to work, how to report, you know, what systems to follow. So, you know, I think there's a lot of learning that we can get.
Of course, I think one of the early things that I remember is that we were doing a budget for a very small business that was being set up in a room about this size, of maybe 500 square feet. And it was the JV with Quaker. And we were fighting over how many workers I can employ. And I said, it's just a few thousand rupees. At that time, the minimum wage was 2,000-3,000 rupees. So in Punjab, so it's 3,000 rupees. How does it matter if we have five workers extra? I said, well, I don't know about that, but the most expensive thing you are ever going to buy is manpower.
Correct.
So this is one thing that we will control from the US. And I think that was a deep learning, because today, if you, you know, relate to that statement and see how India has progressed, and manpower cost is becoming a big issue today in companies. And I think all of us will be facing that challenge, because we are quite intense in our systems even today. And our productivity levels will have to change with the environment.
Correct.
Today.
So, correct.
So some of those learnings, I think, came in early.
So you now work with two international brands, McDonald's and Quaker Oats, is it?
No, the Quaker JV actually kind of went the other way, because Quaker got sold to
Pepsi,
right? And that was a conflict in relationships.
Right.
And at that time, the incoming partner did not want to come into India. So we were forced to, even though I was not really looking to buy the JV at that time, but it happened that, you know, we ended up being the sole owners.
Very interesting. So one part of your business is...
So, but one thing is there, and, you know, take it up ahead from there. That after the JV fell in our way, I think that was the time when we were able to do things the Cremica way a little more. And that led to a lot more improvement in the product. And also in the, you know, and as the relationships progressed with McDonald's and they wanted to bring in more vendors into the system, they also permitted us to, you know, venture out and see businesses.
Correct.
So I think that was a time that was a huge opportunity for the company that, you know, I think it was God's grace that something like this would have happened. And
it's interesting you say that, because that's exactly what I was coming to, that, you know, one side you built a business of supply to McDonald's.
Yeah.
And then over the last few years, I have seen your brand Cremica, which has gone from strength to strength. And I remember once you were talking about when you first released your ad in HT Brunch, and how expensive that ad was, and how what a fantastic return you got. So we'd love to hear your journey about Cremica.
So Ashutosh, this was actually the, I would say, how should I describe it? Like we said, that it was God's grace that we got this opportunity to get into the market. And there was really no design to get into the market and create a brand. It was, in fact, all about, you know, just adding some value to people's businesses, find a few more customers for mayonnaise. And, you know, it was such a new product at that time. And basically, the whole idea was just to do a good job. But it so happened that over a period of time, that this effort in the food service sector started, HoReCa segments, started gaining a lot of traction. And before we realized, we were selling a few million sachets a day, and a huge amount of brand exposure was happening, even though we were not really selling in the retail shelf. And we started, you know, in fact, one of the first campaigns we did in brunch counted how many customers we serve daily or monthly, I'm forgetting now. And that number was a pretty large one.
Yeah.
So it sort of started sinking in that perhaps Cremica brand for ketchup is more exposed than the leading brands in the market.
Right.
Just because you are selling a small value pack, but it is adding value to customers, and you are exposed many times over the retail brands, actually. So the moment we realized that and we started exercising a little effort in the market, we've seen a huge traction in getting discerning customers to pick up the product by choice. So merely informing the customer that the product is available is helping the traction on the brand from the shelf, which you would have realized in your career dealing in a FMCG company earlier and in your own play, that how difficult it is to get into some of these categories, and particularly ketchup, which is, I think, an extremely defensive purchase by the customer. He just doesn't switch from one brand to the other. And for us to get that, I would say, opportunity in the market is pretty awesome.
I agree.
And the rate of growth is quite dramatic.
Correct. But I think what is admirable is the way you have managed to establish Cremica as a brand. And that must have needed some serious rethinking in your organization.
Well, you know, I don't know what to say. I think it's more to do with the training in the mandish.
Right.
So, you know, little things that you would hear as a child from your uncles or your grandfathers about money is not important, images, you know, do the right thing.
Correct.
So, and I think, you know, those values just start affecting each and every one of your decisions. And also, you know, there was a lot of influence in my career and in all my actions of my wife's leanings towards the Soka Gakkai, which is all about value creation. And I think all those values, whether they were my uncles or grandparents who would, you know, talk about image and honesty. And in fact, my grandfather was known for honesty in business in the city. And I think those values just percolate down to the customer, and repeated correct action leads to the customer's belief. And that is, I think, the solidity of a brand. The other values that we can try to you know, try and create by advertising or anything, as far as food is concerned, perhaps would be much more short-lived. And the space that we've been able to get into is pretty long-term, and is there to stay. So the trust remains.
Absolutely, I agree. And once you've established the brand, then the value of the brand gets added on by the repeat purchase from the customer. And, you know, customers, I trust Cremica, and that's what is most important.
So you see, also, I would again talk about the values various quarters that have influenced these decisions.
Mm.
That through the 20 years, it's not as if the businesses did not get challenged on cost, and there is always the easy way out.
Mm.
But I had learned, I think, early in life when we were doing the bread business, that this friend of mine, a manager with a major corporation, once told me, we companies in India are, excellent in salami slicing.
Mm.
And then I thought about it, that how I have salami sliced in my career in some cases, and learned it rather quickly. And we were fortunate that when it came to developing the condiment business, we were, I think, in a position that we could choose to do what we felt like doing, keep the pace that we wanted to pick, keep, there was no pressures.
Mm.
And I think over 20 years, the only changes that would happen to a product were to improve it.
Mm.
So I think that that's what held the business together. And so today, after so many years, and we look at how many companies have tried to get into the space that we have created, there's a huge amount of pressure that's building up, and particularly with large corporates backing some businesses, or major investors throwing in hundreds of crores of rupees. But it is surprising that the foundations that we created have been able to sustain all this pressure, and we are able to perhaps exercise a premium of almost 20% over the nearest competitor.
Correct.
In some of the spaces.
Correct.
And it's quite surprising that that kind of not that we make that much money.
Someday you will.
Yeah, but you see, the thing is that you want to create value and you want to make a better product.
Yeah.
But the fact is that when your customer is choosing you with that kind of a premium, that's where you feel quite delighted and happy.
Wonderful.
That you've ended up doing a good job.
I also noticed that you take on some of the biggest names in the business. When you got into Cremica ketchups, you got there. Then I saw you launched wafers, chips, which was in such a crowded space that you made an amazing name for yourself in that business. What drives you into taking on these big names?
I don't know whether we've really taken on anyone. I think it's more to do with, let's do a good job and get our own with it. We are not there to bite somebody else's, I would say make a hole in someone else's pocket, but create your own value.
Yeah.
And there was a little learning, and I would rather reflect on that when you ask this question.
Yeah.
Is that there was a snack food business that we built quite early on, and we were seeing this terrific growth of Haldiram's in the market and Pepsi coming in and launching namkeens, and we were doing biscuits, and it was only natural that we would also do the salty snacks. Mm. But for some reason, this was like, it would not sell.
Mm.
The products were pretty good, and I think as Cremica, we knew how to do a good job. And over a period of time, I realized that, we are following someone, and that doesn't work. And if you want to be successful, I think what the customer recognizes, people who stick their neck out and do something new and unique. So having learned that, then, we were also analyzing internally that what happened to ketchup or mayonnaise, and, there were innovations that were happening far ahead of the local market. So it was only natural that, we thought of actually getting into kettle chips by design and bring a totally innovative premium offering under the space, which was pretty empty.
Mm.
It's a small market, but you're right, it has created a mark and caught the eyes of the customer. And I think it's the innovation and the first mover advantage that businesses have to build.
Mm. Amazing. So, you have built a small business and you've scaled up. Then you built another small business and you scaled up. Then you built chips or wafers and you scaled up. What are, one of the biggest challenges I find when I speak to a lot of entrepreneurs is that they falter when they scale. What are your learnings from the challenges you faced while scaling up?
You know, challenges, well, first of all, I don't think that we've scaled up. I think we are just a work in progress.
Okay.
There's
okay.
a lot more things to do and room to grow.
Okay.
Yes, in some of the categories, our volumes are starting to becoming seriously important in the industry. But the big challenges were, I think the biggest challenge is always money for an entrepreneur. And when I started out,
right.
there was nothing known as private equity.
Mm.
So we found actually some of our competitors failing because they were growing too fast and, you know, not having systems in place. And I think, you know, not able to survive.
Mm.
But I think in our case, we were able to kind of, I don't know, it wasn't by design. I would hate to say that I was that qualified or knowledgeable. But it just happened that, you know, you knew that you have to make ends meet. So you do what you can afford to do. And so the challenges were always there. But we were trying to find ways and means. And innovation was the big ticket to, you know, I think survival.
Mm.
Because see, people were doing things and we were doing things that people were not doing. And companies are even today laying claims to research that processes that we commercialized 20 years back.
Wow.
So I think in that space, in the vegetarian mayonnaise space, we took leadership. We took leadership in the quality space in ketchup.
Mm.
So, and the customers rewarding us for that.
Excellent. So with this whole move now happening towards e-commerce and big format e-commerce giants like an Amazon and Flipkart, and you are on both of these platforms, how do you see food retailing change in our country?
I think there's going to be a very big change.
Uh-huh.
The ease of ordering online for busy lives is just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And so food retailing and especially branded food getting sold on online platform is going to be the order of the day. And I see, you know, brands that are trusted do very well in this environment because the customer has an even lesser engagement moving forward.
Hmm.
See, earlier on, the customer would engage with the shelf.
Yeah.
And that's something that is going to go into the, you know, screen. And I think his ability to take a decision of change is going to be more difficult.
Hmm.
So I see that, you know, current brands who have established themselves in the market are going to do quite well.
Hmm.
The new ones will have more challenges and they'll have to work rather hard.
Hmm.
So to get the attention and the mind space moving forward is going to be a little bit of a bigger challenge.
Hmm. So now moving on to some other types of questions, Akshay. You know, you have led a very, very busy life and you're extremely busy building more brands, building new, expanding the business and so on. What keeps you going every morning when you wake up? I mean, you know, what is the big excitement that you look for every day when you go?
No, I haven't thought of it much. I think there are times and there is no time to think about it because you're always handling some crisis or the other.
Right.
And so the last few years have been, you know, I would say quite busy.
Mm-hmm.
And because the family was demerging and businesses were separating, and yet at that time we were looking at growth and then raising funds, equity single-handedly. So, yeah, but as business settles down, you start looking at this, and most of the time, I mean, it's I like to take my early morning walk.
Mm-hmm.
That's become a pretty serious, I would say,
routine,
and a really pleasant one.
Right.
So an hour in the morning. And of course, in the evening, meet friends like you and enjoy ourselves.
Wonderful. So what are your thoughts on work-life balance? I mean, you know, most of us have spent so much time working that when you reach a certain stage, and I'm much older than you, but you reach a certain stage in life and you look back and say, did I give enough time to other aspects of my life other than just making money and building businesses? And very often when people ask me that question, my answer is no. So I just thought I'll take your thoughts on it.
I think more time, sometimes as we are younger and we are growing up, I think most time that should go, that doesn't go, is to the family. Hmm. And that's where I think the investments will happen moving forward. Hmm. And more time will go to family activities and, spending more time together,
yeah,
going out.
Yeah.
I think today's time also demands that. Hmm. Because everybody is getting busier and busier, and we are now needing 2-3 hours of screen time every day, so which is not good.
Yeah.
So I think human relationships have to be invested in.
Correct. So my next question is something I'll ask everybody. And that's because, and it's a question that's going to be relating to, I want to ask you, what is your biggest learning from your biggest failure? And the reason I ask this is because the thousands of people who are listening to our podcasts actually don't imagine that someone of your stature could have made mistakes, when all of us have made mistakes. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on your biggest learning from your biggest failure.
So, I really can't think of a, failure from which a mistake was learned. But you see, yes, learnings are there. Mm-hmm. And so there are, the first learning I inadvertently mentioned earlier in today's discussion was about salami slicing, mm-hmm, affecting brands and customers' trust. And that should, that's a decision that can be extremely harmful. And some of those decisions affect those businesses till today. And I think beyond that, there have been some challenges in as we've grown, and without coming to the table with what exactly those were, relationship issues that crop up, or sometimes businesses coming under a challenge. So the important thing is, I think that one should not lose sanity and keep on with the correct actions. Because I think it's from that relationships will turn, and even people who are negative will become positive. Mm. So there was a time in the beginning when these businesses were built for McDonald's, that obligations could not be met, and the family was not forthcoming, that the business almost went out of my hands. But through the next few years, the support to the business, to McDonald's and to other companies continued, and to the family. And I would say that automatically things fell in place again. So, I would really reflect on that as the biggest learning, from a situation, that one should continue with honesty, correctness. I would just say, living up the high value in your day-to-day life.
Correct.
So that helps.
Correct. So my last question to you, and, 2 or 3 years ago, you had come with me to speak at the Indian Institute of Management, Rohtak.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know your talk was quite a big hit with all the young students. Well, I shouldn't say young. They were all engineers, 26, 27, 28 year olds. And we actually had people from outside the institute who came and listened to your talk. So you're quite an iconic startup entrepreneur, certainly in North India. So my question to you would be that, what would your advice be to the young startup entrepreneur who's looking all starry-eyed and wants to build a business?
I think we've said that all along, that you have to do good things, innovate, first mover, and continue with the good job and not run after money, run after the customer's, I would say, satisfaction.
Yeah,
that's what is more important.
That's an important thing you commented on also, that, you know, do the right thing and don't do it only for money.
You can't just do it for money,
correct?
Because it's for the short term, you can take decisions and then you'll not have the long term.
Right. Thank you, Akshay, very much. It's been fantastic having you on our podcast.
Hey,
I look
being
forward
here.
To talking to you again.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure being here.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for The Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.